Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Brent Gunning and Ailish this morning. JD's on vacation. For those of you texting in, did he get fired? He always says this. No, I did not get fired. I'm on vacation. He took a lengthy 5-day weekend.
Well, and here's the thing. The Jays did lose, so he can come back now.
That's right.
He did his big spiel about, I can't do any more sad Jays, and then it was happy days, but they lost, so he can come back.
And there's an off day today, so he won't even, have tonight's redemption to possibly, redeem himself. He's coming back.
Let me tell you, I love spending my mornings with you, Ailish. I do. But I would have been bummed out if the bosses called me at 10 o'clock tonight saying, oh, sorry, Jays won, JD's still banned. So.
Yeah, you're like, this is enough for me, okay? I've got a couple days in filling. I wonder where Julia Kreutz is on the Blue Jays roller coaster. She's our Blue Jays reporter, MLB.com, and she's always on the Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning to you guys. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. I think this weekend instilled some confidence for Blue Jays fans. What is it like for you riding the roller coaster that has been the last couple weeks of covering the Blue Jays?
Yeah, it's not easy from a reporter's perspective. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of stories that never see the light of day. There's a lot of buzzer beaters, if you will, that need to be written and end up never going to post. So, it's interesting. I think everything is, first of all, an exercise in patience, and then trying to remind yourself that this is why you do the job and that's what makes it fun. And there was a lot of fun to be had in New York last weekend.
Yeah, there was. I mean, let's just start with the big man who's always got something to say, Alek Manoah. Obviously not the result the Blue Jays wanted out of the team yesterday, but still another solid start for him. You know, the thing Ailish and I were talking about off the top of the show here was just the idea of what a, I don't know, galvanizing presence, kind of, for lack of a better term, he can be. You know, we always think of an ace as a streak stopper, somebody who can get you kind of right in the back frame of mind of things. But this team doesn't really need that because they've got Gausman and they've got a good solid outing out of Berríos lately. But it just seems to me like you see this guy go into Yankee Stadium and he's telling Gerrit Cole to sit down and he's not all that worried about buzzing Judge in tight. It's just you can easily see this guy having big, big moments in the playoffs. He might falter, but that won't be because the moment's too big for him.
No, he might falter, honestly, because he is just a sophomore, and I think that it's very easy to forget that this is Alek Manoah's first full MLB season, and the workload that comes with that is not easy. It does take a toll, and the fact that he has avoided injury to me is fascinating, and he is going to miss those pitches up and in sometimes. It's nothing personal, and I know that when you do it to a guy like Aaron Judge, you can feel personal, but it's just Alek Manoah getting into the rhythm of things, and that's okay. Now, no moment is too big for Alek Manoah. I think that he has proved that time and time again this year. And the fact that he was ready to go with Gerrit Cole and he, said what he said after the game, it shows me that. And that is the type of guy that you want in the playoffs. I think that he got the short end of the stick yesterday because the Blue Jays bats went pretty quiet for most of the game. Still, if he delivered a one earned run performance there. You'll take that every single day if you're the Blue Jays. It would have been great to see the Blue Jays sweep the Yankees. I think it would have added a little more chaos and a little more emotion to this roller coaster that we're all collectively on right now. But, I don't think Alek Manoah is to blame at all for that.
So looking at the weekend as a whole, did it have a playoff-type vibe to you? Think about the big pitching matchups, obviously the electric atmosphere of Yankee Stadium being basically a sellout all weekend, and even seeing the managers starting to play their hand and make these little tweaks. For me, it felt very playoff-esque. I wonder if that resonated with you as well.
Oh, certainly. And I wasn't there, but if you followed along with the beat reporters' tweets on both sides, there was a lot of description on the energy and the fact that, you know, people were, the Yankee Stadium was popping when the Yankees finally got a lead, right? And when there was sort of that slow, kind of boring benches clearing situation, it felt very much like a playoff atmosphere. It felt very much like there was a lot more on the line than just one game in a weekend in August. And that is fascinating, and it's kind of cool, right? You're kind of just looking forward to the next time that the Blue Jays and Yankees are going to face each other. And they will most likely face each other a third time or a fourth time in October. And that is pretty exciting to think about.
So seeing how this weekend, okay, had that type of vibe for you as well, how do you feel like the Manoah-Gausman-Berríos ranking of starting pitching rotations in a playoff series is for you in terms of a confidence level? And is there a team that kind of rivals that in terms of power?
I'm very, very confident in those three guys. I would also add Ross Stripling to that. I think he has earned, you know, sort of that spot as well. If you're talking about a big three in the playoffs, I think that the Blue Jays find themselves in a very comfortable position in which they have four guys that can do that. When you look at the Yankees with Nestor Cortes and Gerrit Cole, that is a pretty scary duo as well. So I would say that, again, that'll be a fascinating one to watch from now until the postseason. I'm trying to think. What do you guys think? Do you think that there's another team that would rival what the Blue Jays bring with those four guys?
I don't see it. I mean, you know, the Mariners went out and they got Castillo, but that doesn't put them into that conversation for me. Like, I don't see another team that can do it. Now, the thing I would say is I am still wholly unsure as to what they have in Jose Berríos. I can easily I can easily see a world where he spins, I don't know, he's had two or three games of 13 Ks this year. I'm not saying that can't happen in the playoffs, but I think it is just as likely he gets touched up a little bit and it's a rocky, you know, four runs over five innings, something like that in the playoffs. That's the thing I'd say about my concern is the Blue Jays definitely have as high a ceiling as anyone else, but it feels like, and specifically with Berríos, and then he hasn't shown it this year in terms of Stripling, but it feels to me like Stripling, because of the lack of a track record, it feels to me like the Blue Jays do have a ceiling that can be reached up there with any team, but they also have a floor that's slightly lower just because of how unsure I am of Berríos and how little of a track record there is for Stripling. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that is a great point. I think that we have seen, it's funny because I keep going back to Berríos' very first start of the season on opening day. I believe he got one out or two.
It was rough.
before he departed. And he was very honest after the game and saying, you know what, I think I got a little nervous. And as much as I appreciate that honest, and I definitely think that he's had time to work on that mental aspect of the game, it does make you wonder how he will fare in a playoff atmosphere, because there's a lot to be nervous about, right? Mm-hmm. And every single mistake is amplified in a scenario like that. We have seen great teams falter when October comes around, and we have seen dark horses shine as well. So Jose Berríos in October remains a question mark. That said, he has the stuff. He has the pitch mix. He is a terrific pitcher. He can go deep into games and give you 13 strikeouts. That, to me, is enough for now to grant him some confidence and or some trust, if you will. And we will see what we have in him come playoff time, but I still have a lot of trust in Jose Berríos.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me about that is that, you know, if there was going to be a game where the nervousness would come out, you'd figure it'd be a big series against the Yankees, and he gives you a 6 2/3. Mm-hmm. He allows just 6 hits, 1 earned run. He strikes out 9, so that's definitely an encouraging sign there. You know, there is positives to get to, so let's get back to those before I go doom and gloom with George Springer. We'll do that before we're done. But back to positives for half a second here. The bullpen. I know Simber got bit by Benintendi yesterday, and obviously that's not the way you want to end the series here. But for a group that has been, you know, I think fairly maligned at certain points this year, this all goes back to Garcia getting the big out before the Blue Jays had their big run against the Orioles on the Wednesday. But outside of Simber's little blip yesterday, a rock-solid weekend from the bullpen. You know, that's another area of concern for this team. And the fact that I know the Yankees aren't hitting like the Yankees right now, but the fact that you can go into Yankee Stadium, you're not just using Romano and Garcia and that's that. You're using other guys. You have to go 3 or 4 deep in a couple of games, and the pen more than holds up. I think that's maybe the most encouraging thing to come out of this weekend.
Absolutely. And I honestly was a little impressed, a little surprised to see that, because even though the Yankees are not right, it was an encouraging development, and it was one that I don't think I honestly didn't anticipate the Blue Jays to blank the Yankees at all at Yankee Stadium. And that just goes to show that there is also untapped potential in this bullpen. These arms are very much to be taken seriously. And that is a good thing. Now, we've been talking all year about clicking at the right time. It certainly felt like the Blue Jays were clicking at Yankee Stadium. And that will include the bullpen arms as well, as a whole, not just with your setup man and your closer. So that to me was probably one of the biggest positives in a weekend filled with them for the Blue Jays. And as for Adam Simber, for a long time this season, he was maybe, you know, one or two in reliability out of that bullpen. I don't think that anyone can blame him or point fingers or be upset if he falters from time to time, because honestly, he has been in the inner circle of trust, as our friend Sho Ali likes to say, for a long time. These outings are just going to happen, like they do for Romano, like they do for Garcia.
Julia, what did you see from the Blue Jays' offensive approach that might have been different on this series? They got a couple games with a lot of runs, which is something that they hadn't had previously, a six-run game, a 9-run game, 4 and 5. Are the bats actually getting hot? Was there a different approach that inspired a little bit of confidence for you?
Yeah, I think that this is just who the Blue Jays are when they're at their best, right? They are very, very talented offensively, and this should be the norm, Eilish. The norm should be the Blue Jays just erupting, because there's so much easy power in that lineup. When you look at Teoscar Hernandez, when you look at Vlad himself, it's even Bo Bichette, who is still scuffling a little bit, but you know, we know his ability to get the extra base hits, to pull those line drives and all of that. This is the identity that we expected from the Blue Jays. And for them to come in and do that at Yankee Stadium really bodes well for the rest of the season, because maybe they are now seeing or realizing what was expected of them all along.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when someone kind of starts to scuff the surface of their potential there. You know, somebody who, unfortunately, because of injuries, has only been able to just scuff the surface of it. And man, oh man, it's right there. We could see it. He shines so bright. George Springer. Mm-hmm. I would love to sit here and tell you I feel great about how much he's going to give this team down the stretch and into the playoffs. But my gut feeling is telling me we are going to be sitting here having a conversation in December saying, oh man, could you imagine if Springer was at 80% as opposed to the 65 or 70 or who knows what he's going along with now. It just seems to me like that's going to be the big what if of this Blue Jays season. If he would have gone on the IL and came off and, okay, here's the plan. He's going to be in the lineup 4 days a week, or he's going to be building to play center field. But the fact that he's already kind of back to missing games a little bit, I'd love to lie and say I'm not discouraged. But man, oh man, it is very worrying, the health of George Springer right now.
Yeah, and the fact that it's not the elbow that is keeping him away right now, ostensibly, right? It's a foul ball off the knee. So we know that George Springer is injury prone. We have seen it last year. And it certainly does not look good when you have to miss multiple games after fouling a ball off your knee. Now, there might be another element to it, right? They might be listing the knee as a problem, but maybe the elbow is still bothering him, and it's better to sit him for a little bit. And the fact that they're saying that he's day-to-day doesn't exactly breed any type of confidence. And Schneider keeps saying that, you know, George Springer is available off the bench. There hasn't been really an opportunity for him to come in. I think that he had a pinch hit appearance in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, in the last series against the Orioles. But that's
Wednesday, he had the big knock in the seventh there, but yeah.
That was him. There you go, yeah. And then that was the big inning for the Blue Jays. So there you go. You get a little bit of Springer, and you realize just how much the Blue Jays can do with him in the lineup and how a game can change so quickly when he starts things up offensively and he is that spark plug. There's a reason why he bats leadoff. There's a reason why he is now holding the Blue Jays franchise record for single season leadoff home runs. It's who he is, and it is a big absence for the Blue Jays to fill. I believe they have done a decent job for the most part. You know, when you have Raimel Tapia or Whit Merrifield playing center field, that's okay. You're not missing much in terms of defense, or Jackie Bradley Jr. In latest days. And then when you're looking at the top of the lineup, maybe you have Lourdes Gurriel Jr. there, who's a high on base guy and can give you sort of a start offensively. But George Springer is George Springer. You're never going to be able to replace him 100%. You're never going to be able to replace 80% of George Springer most of the time. And it would be a shame if that were to be the difference maker in the postseason.
Well, Blue Jays have another off day today, and then they start another important series against the Red Sox this week, and then the Angels at home. This weekend, actually, is going to be the 30th anniversary of their World Series victory, which will be really cool, their first one. So that'll be a busy weekend at the ballpark, hopefully bringing the good vibes for the Toronto Blue Jays. Julia, appreciate you joining us, giving us the breakdown of where you are on the roller coaster. Hopefully next week we're still on the rise and we get to talk to you then.
Thank you very much.
That was Julia Kreutz, Blue Jays reporter at MLB.com and a contributor to us, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Quick little PSA. You mentioned they're celebrating the 30th anniversary. I believe it is the 27th, so that'd be the Saturday. Mm-hmm. They're giving away that like satin bomber jacket.
I have the original World Series one. So everybody that's going to end up with one this weekend, we're all going to be twins, but mine's authentic.
Yeah, you're playing for second place, let's be honest. Right. Like twins, but the little twin. And so here's the thing. Get there 17 hours
like
early.
Literally the night before camp out.
Or plan to miss the first inning or two and don't fight at the gates. Yeah. Those are your options. I wish I had another one for you. Those are your options right there. I was there on Vlad bobblehead.
Oh my God, I saw the lineups for that.
It was absurd. So, there's many gates, but the main one, it stretched all past the statue of Ted Rogers, all the way past Ripley's. I don't think it went all this way, but if you look down Bremner there, you can see Scotiabank. Mm-hmm. It looked like it went straight to Scotiabank. It was incredible. People love free stuff. Here's the thing. Snagged one. It's a sweet bobblehead.
Yeah. You bobblehead guy. I had last week we had conversations about bobbleheads, and I just said like I don't really like know what people do with them. And I got a bunch of people tweet in like their bobblehead collections on mantles, in bookshelves, and you know, rooms full of them, like a Steve Dangle-esque experience. So I don't know if you're one of those guys,
no,
or you
no.
just got a
so
couple.
When No, so it all goes back to my little guy, big Vlad guy. So he's going to break that in a day. And then
it'll be worth a lot of money one day, okay?
I know. I used to have at my workstation back when we actually, you know, like went into the office and stuff. I would have a bunch of decrepit bobbleheads that were like broken and missing hands and everything. So it was kind of like the spooky bobblehead collection. not a full-fledged bobblehead guy, but always love to look at them.
The bomber jacket will be sick. But you're right. The lines will be insane. I actually, when I previously worked for the Toronto Blue Jays, I remember those days that were people would honestly camp out the nights before, and we would be arriving for our shift, and you'd be walking past people, and like you'd be there multiple hours early, and you'd be like, good morning. And they're like, do you have one? Yeah. And I'm like, no, I haven't even entered the ballpark. They're like, can you bring me one? And like, it's just a different level of competitiveness as well. When the gates open, there's a line and pushing and pushing and pushing. We have to say, hey, can everybody just take a deep breath? You're going to get one. There's 15,000 of them waiting. You are first in line. You will be handed one of these bobbleheads. And then you have the people that are like, can I have 3 or 4? And the rule is one per person, right? So you have to say, no, I'm sorry, you can't have 4 or 5. And one time I had a customer a fan show me that they had purchased 15 tickets to the game.
My goodness.
And thought that they were able to get 15 bobbleheads. But the rule is stated very evidently that you cannot get 15 bobbleheads. I don't care if you bought 15 tickets. So had to break a couple hearts.
Not going to game the system there.
No. And they try to convince you and say that they have a dying family member and they need the bobblehead. And it gets...
Somebody's always dying.
Yeah, it's a tough experience. So get there early this weekend, okay?
It's like the old university professors. How many grandparents you have? It's like the sixth one.
I have another one that passed away, and I can't
finish
my essay.
It's really
more
of a family friend, but it's really close. You got to take my word for it. Oh,
yeah, but this weekend will be a whole thing. So yeah, get there early. Okay, so some crazy Tom Brady news happened this weekend.
Wild.
It's our Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum yum yum.
Okay. Wow. So Tom Brady and the Raiders could have been a thing that happened. Like, what world would have changed so significantly? Apparently, there was an entire deal broken down. The reason this came out was because Dana White was on a broadcast this weekend and basically told the whole story.
Can we pause for half a second?
There's so much going on here. I don't have to unpack
it. This is very true to brand of this story. That we haven't heard the name Adam Schefter.
Yep, none of these people.
We haven't heard Ian Rappaport yet. But don't worry, guys. Dana White is on the case. Amazing. Okay. I love where we're starting already.
It's already like, it's like a Mad Lib, you know? It's like you fill in the blank. This happened, and then this person did this, and then this is how it came out at this event. So we actually have the audio clip of kind of the story that unfolded.
I worked to put that deal together for Brady and Gronk to come to the Raiders. And it was almost a done deal. And at the last minute, Gruden blew the deal up and said that he didn't want him. And hell broke loose, man. It was crazy.
And, who's that guy?
And Brady was already looking at houses, and it wasn't being said yet that Gronk was coming.
Like, okay, first of all, imagine being...
There's so much there.
The people that already hate John Gruden just jumped into another realm of hatred after hearing that he just didn't want Tom Brady and would have got Gronk. And the deal was already basically done. He was looking at houses. Like, the way that this Raiders team could have changed forever is part one of the story.
Oh, my God. It's incredible. It's so, so good. Okay, so again, just like, let's all, for our slightly older listeners, just imagine Don King just saying, well, you know, MJ was going to go to the Knicks, but we blew it all up because Jeff Van Gundy could, like... Again, Dana White is sitting here brokering NFL deals for some reason because that's what he does in his side gig. The fact that of all teams, it's the Raiders. Of course, Tom Brady, many will say, would never have gone on to become Tom Brady if he didn't get lucky in the Tuck game all those many moons ago against the Raiders. How serendipitous would that have been? And then the last thing I'll say about this is... You know, we all pull up some real estate listings from time to time, or, you know, like to go on Zillow. Can you imagine how fun it is to go look at houses with Tom Brady's money?
Oh, my God.
You're not just looking for fun. You could actually go buy them. I cannot believe they blew that up. Also, is Tom Brady trying to be tied to every team in the AFC before it's all said and done? We've got the Dolphins now. Now we've got the Raiders. Obviously, long time in New England. Man, what a story. And it just feels so perfectly chaotic that Dana White is at the center of it.
And there was this infamous quote that Brady had said, I think a season or two ago, about that mother blank, and nobody really knew who he was firing the shot at, but maybe we know now. This was the quote.
We do.
There was a story in free agency, one of the teams, they were interested, and all of a sudden they weren't interested at the very end. I was sitting there thinking, you're sticking with that mother.
Are you serious?
Tom probably had no desire to go to that team, but now it's like, why don't you want me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. When I look back, I'm like, I just way would have went to that team. But they said they didn't want me, and I know what that means. I know what that feels like, and I'm going to you up because of that.
Derek Carr hearing that might not feel great. Boy, what a experience, a world that could have been. Tiny tidbit. This morning when I woke up, I'm scanning the Twitter feed, laying in bed, opening my eyes, and the tabloids.
Yes.
You cannot trust the tabloids. I'm going to just say that as a disclaimer.
Good caveat.
But are saying that Tom Brady and his wife, Giselle, might be on the verge of a divorce, and that's why he's taking a leave of absence.
Whoa!
Whoa is right. They've been reportedly in the Bahamas or Barbados at a private resort for the last little while he's been away from camp. This is all reportedly by the tabloids. Multiple tabloids coming out saying that there's potentially a divorce. You heard it here first, okay? If it doesn't happen, you did not hear it here first.
Here's the thing. Look, you know, you hope it's all wedded bliss for Brady and Bunchen over there, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, most couples hit the rocks. They got to go sit in a strip mall somewhere and listen to somebody tell them to listen to each other more. Where do they go? They go to the Bahamas or who knows where they're canoodling, mm-hmm. trying to figure it out. Obviously, you know, we want love to last here. Whatever the Brady and Bunchen clan needs, that is just so wild. And yes, thoroughly loved the drive-by of Derek Carr this morning. And last thing also, especially for these like pitchman type, you know, we know Brady's crazy. Like we see him screaming, let's bleep and go on the sideline every single time he's on a football field. How great is it to just hear these guys be regular people and just swear a little and be mad, why should Tom Brady ever feel slighted by
any
person
in
the NFL? Of all people, Derek Carr, he's going to sit here and be like, oh, how could they? It's amazing to see that he's just a regular dude under all that.
I love how he made it at the end, a little twist of like, well, now I know how it feels to be passed over. It's like, oh boy, did you unlock something in Tom Brady that
he hadn't unlocked? He once felt that way.
That's
it's
right.
Like all of a sudden he's right back to the sixth round draft pick. Who's like, they said I couldn't do it. Oh, if you did this to us, Dana White, thank you. Because I love watching Brady.
I love it. Okay, from sixth round draft picks to first round draft picks.
Yeah.
Where's that iconic Mason McTavish moment rank for our next guest, Sam Cosentino? Joining us after the break is Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Brent Gunning and myself this morning, JD on vacay. I wonder if he partook in any World Junior viewing. I think he was a little busy this weekend, but I caught it in the Canadian cottage experience, sitting there with a Caesar watching the Canadian boys take it home.
Not jealous at all.
It was nice. It was very Canadian. I just needed like a little maple syrup pancake, something good. Sammy Kaz, our guy, Sportsnet junior hockey and NHL draft analyst. You got to see the iconic Mason McTavish moment. Where does that rank in elite Canadian hockey moments?
Yeah, it's got to be right there near the top. I mean, to think that literally a game went from being lost and tournament over to, you know, seconds later going back the other way. What a really cool thing to see. And for a young man who, I think he sacrificed a little bit, mm-hmm. to be perfectly honest with you, to come play on this team because, you know, he's getting ready to try and be a full-time NHLer this year. There were some other players that either through injury or through their preparation to try and make the NHL this year did not participate. And Mason McTavish had recently gone through the painful loss at the Memorial Cup with the Hamilton Bulldogs and said, I want to crack at winning this thing with some of the guys that I got to play with at the under-18s a year and a half ago. And he made it happen. Just a brilliant performance by that young man.
It seems like he literally had to beg the Anaheim Ducks to let him come to this tournament, and so great that he got an opportunity, because I think, and Brent and I said this earlier, like, he wasn't a guy super on our radar, and for you, you're probably like, well, shut up, because he was amazing, but just his opportunity this tournament to really put himself on that world stage, to give those casual, you know, draft analysts an opportunity to see him. How do you wrap up this entire tournament, being one of the leading goal scorers, being the face of Canada, the leadership that he showed, and just kind of where he's going to fit down the line here with the Ducks?
I think for me, he's a really perfect example for a lot of young players out there, because he went into the Ontario Hockey League at 16 years old in Peterborough. He was a 29-goal scorer, and many just pigeonholed him to be exactly that. He can score, and he can't do much else. And then the pandemic hit, and because of his roots and his dad having played professional hockey in Switzerland, was able to go over there and find ice and game action when most players in Ontario weren't. And that experience was huge for him, because it made him realize that he could compete against men, that he could be an impactful player other than just scoring goals, yet not lose the ability to score goals. Then he comes back and he participates for Canada at the under-18s. And, you know, Shane Wright and Connor Bedard got all the hype there, but he was really the glue guy for that team that won that unusual under-18s in Texas and was a mainstay for Canada there. And I think that set the tone for what we saw in this tournament. You know, he goes back to Peterborough, gets traded to Hamilton, wins an OHL championship, and then, of course, the heroic moment with Canada and being a leader there. And I think there are times when you can underestimate what winning means to a player's development. And for Mason McTavish, I think he felt that, hey, I know there's some guys not going here. I want to be one of the guys that said yes, and I want to be an impact guy. And I think with him saving that goal and with all the points he produced throughout the course of the tournament, it proves to me that he's a much more well-rounded player now than he was at 16 when I first had a look at him. So where he fits for the Ducks, he's going to play center ice, maybe not this year, but he might get that opportunity. But he's going to be a big piece of their rebuild moving forward. So really, really happy for the young man.
No, that's awesome. I'm happy you highlighted the point about how impactful winning for young players can be. Now, this is a point I've hammered home at the NHL level about the Leafs own young core, and we're not going to go down that rabbit hole today. But man, oh man, when you are able to have success and those lessons just kind of get hardened within you. And then, Sam, I'm so happy you brought up what you said about the under-18s, because I am not you. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm grinding over and watching tape on all these guys. But hand up, anytime I get a chance to watch Connor Bedard, I'm doing it. And I was glued to that tournament to watch that guy. I was glued to this World Juniors to watch Connor Bedard. But it's pretty incredible to me that a guy in Bedard, who is going to be, we all think, one of these generational talents, every time I turned on my TV to watch him, my eyes kept going to McTavish. And I think that's the final piece I can say about him, just in terms of how impactful he's been at the under-18s and then into this World Juniors this year. It's just when my eyes are trained on a guy who has all the wow factor that Bedard does, and McTavish is still able to stand out, that's what kind of jumps out to me.
You know, it's funny, Guns, when you talk about that, because a lot of times players are scouted that way, that you walk into a rink and you're honed in on somebody that you want to watch, and you have to go back and you watch that player multiple times, and kind of out of the corner of your eye and in your peripheral vision, you're seeing somebody else, and you're like, wow, this guy's pretty good. And you go back and you keep watching. And there have been a number of players that have been drafted for that very reason. And I'll give you a pretty good example of that is, you know, speaking about Connor Bedard, there's a young man, a defenseman by the name of Riker Evans, who went to Seattle with the first pick in the second round 2 years ago. And they were in that Regina bubble. And, you know, he had gone through the draft twice and really hadn't generated a lot of NHL interest. But they kept going back to that bubble. Scouts that were located in Saskatchewan and the Regina area kept going back and going back. And as part of watching the Regina Pats and everybody else in the bubble, Riker Evans was the guy that they saw and pretty much shocked the world when he went with the first pick in the second round to Seattle. So that sort of thing happens where you're going to watch something and something out of the corner of your eye catches your eye. And as a result, good things happen because of it.
Is there anyone else on the Canadian roster or elsewhere that was a bit of a surprise to you that maybe caught your eye that wasn't someone that you had circled as one of those big name players that had an opportunity to put themselves in the conversation?
Well, you know, when I look at the entire group and you think about some guys that had the opportunity and others that didn't take that opportunity, there are a couple of players that have been drafted to me that actually I think stuck out. So Joakim Kemmel is a kid for Finland who, you know, I had watched, and at the start of last year in his draft year, he was leading Liga in scoring. Then he got hurt. He went through all kinds of issues. You know, the pain in the shoulder was bothering him right up through, you know, the truncated World Juniors where they played two games and canceled it. And as a result of that and him not maybe finishing as strong as most people would have liked, he dropped in the draft just a little bit. And to see him come back and to see him respond and rebound, I think he had 11 or 12 points in the tournament. He was one guy that caught my eye. Another guy would be his teammate, Atu Ratu. And here's a guy that we looked at going into the 2021 draft as a top five guy at the start of that draft campaign. And he just had an awful year in Liga. Couldn't put up any points, wasn't playing a lot. And as a result of that poor play for his year, at one point considering leaving hockey altogether, he ends up going in the second round, 52nd or third overall to the Islanders. He rebounded because it's not often you see a kid make it at 16, gets cut at 17, and then comes back in his 18/19-year-old year and becomes a star again. So really, really excited to have seen him progress to getting back to the way he played when he was a younger player after having gone through some adversity. So those would be two guys that I would pull out. And I think the last guy here would be Olin Zellweger. You know, you play in Everett, you're a defenseman. You don't probably get a lot of looks or a lot of love. And I thought he was brilliant for Canada all tournament long, you know, moving pucks, skating pucks out, being a part of the rush. He's a guy whose game has progressed so well here over the last couple of years. And it's nice to see someone from Everett get the kind of love they deserve.
Yeah, that is great to see. You know, you mentioned Kemmel there on the Finnish side. He gets a goal in the gold medal game there. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the couple of Finnish Leafs prospects that are there. Obviously, Topi Niemelä. I don't know if I'm nailing the pronunciations like you are, Sam. So forgive me here.
I think that one was good.
And Roni Hirvainen there. Obviously, you know, these guys both had big, big roles on the Finnish team. Just going off that pass, he snapped across to Kemmel. I love what I see from Niemelä. What can you tell us about those two guys?
Yeah, well, I think he's the type of guy that Toronto is really trying to cultivate here, and someone that, you know, down the road that they would expect to run a power play. But, you know, the vision is pretty clear, and that one goal is a good example of that. But he's a good skater. He's a guy who I think that people probably underrate a little bit defensively, and I think that part of his game is sound. Obviously, any player that's playing that position in the NHL is something you're going to have to improve on a little bit. But I like the fact that you know, he's a guy that you can project down the road that will run a power play for you. And I liken him a little bit to what we've seen from Morgan Rielly. Maybe the offensive upside that was projected might not be to that great level, but you're going to see a guy who can run a power play, who can play a lot of minutes for you. He's going to be a good character and a good citizen and someone who can, you know, play in your top four here down the road. When it comes to Hirvonen, he reminds me a lot of the Leafs prospects, a smaller, speedy guy who's super skilled, who could put up points for you, but probably needs to be insulated by some bigger players around him, you know, in order to be highly effective at the National Hockey League level. And I think that's perfectly fine. Toronto had a great run there of where they'd identified players that they were able to pick up a little bit later in the draft, that they're going to overcook a little bit by either letting them continue to play in Finland, then bring them over to the American Hockey League, and then hopefully there's a group of young guys that can come up together and you know, when things start to go sideways, when all these contracts come up, whether it's Marner and Matthews all together, that there'll be some people that can fill in some spots that have been homegrown by Toronto.
you said Morgan Rielly, and both of us, our eyes wide, and we're like, whoa.
Sounds like he's the real Finnish Bobby Orr, not Mikko Lehtinen. Yeah.
Okay, so another Leafs prospect. We didn't get to see too much Matthew Nyes in high leverage moments as USA kind of blew it there with that upset. But in the short amount of time you got to see Matthew Nyes, was it his physicality that really stood out to you?
For me, he's a guy that is really important here for Toronto. They just don't have that type of player in their system. So, I spoke to David Quinn, the head coach of the Sharks, who had him back with the Olympics, and he had a great appreciation for his game, just saying, hey, you know what, I love this guy. He's an NHL player. Now, I don't know if he's ready for that right away. And obviously the young man himself figured one more year in school and an opportunity to live a more normal school and college life. Bayless, you and I have talked about this before, but that opportunity is going to be presented to him this year. But, you know, aside from that and being a kid, which I'm always, you know, up for, because sometimes these kids are thrust into, you know, adulthood maybe too early. So when it comes to Nyes, you get back to his game, really good around the net. You know, he's got a good stick. He's got good vision. He knows how to use his size to create soft ice in front of the net. And when he gets it there, he can score. And then that added element of physicality is something that Toronto, at least from a homegrown perspective, doesn't have a lot of. And that's why I find him to be a super important prospect for the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, throwing the weight around, and feels like he'll be doing that more ways than one in college if he really, really enjoys himself down there. Last one for me before we let you go, Connor Bedard. I started off talking to you about him. Yes, McTavish was the guy that stood out, but Bedard is the meal ticket for Canada hockey. It feels like he's the next one. We're going to get a chance to see him play at this tournament again in about 4 months' time. Just how sky is the limit for him? Is it, do you have a comp? Is he a true kind of one of one? What do you think about Connor Bedard after seeing
Connor McDavid?
Yeah, I know that it's rolling right off the tongue there. What do you make of Bedard after the latest showing you've seen from him?
Well, I mean, I think he's a future star. I think he's a guy that understands where he is in the hockey world. Didn't put any of his rest to sleep. Over the course of the off season, where he just continues to train at an elite level with a lot of really good people around him in BC. And it's kind of neat for me because, you know, basically as a 15-year-old, I was interviewing him when the Regina Pats made him the first overall pick in the WHL Bantam draft. And to watch him progress physically, you're starting to see, you know, he was like a little boy then. And now he's starting to turn into a young man, which is, physically is obviously a big part of the developmental process, but he has continued through a lot of adverse moments, be it pandemic or, you know, locked up in a bubble, not getting the proper development time in your draft minus 1 and 2 years, which most players have been afforded before him, yet still has a way to figure out how to be a player who lights it up every time you see him, who gets you on the edge of your chair when you're watching, who you go and pay to watch play. But I like how he's added an explosiveness to his game, especially in the quickness of the first three steps. His shot is, it's ridiculous. There's not many guys who can curl and drag it and shoot it between legs or around defenseman's legs. And not that he needs the screen to get it by the goalie, but it gets on you fast. Good flexible stick that he uses, probably have to change as he gets a bit older and a bit stronger. But listen, there's a lot of pressure on this young man. This is an awesome draft class. The 2023 class, I think, is going to go down as one of the best we've seen in years. And he's the leader of the pack right now. So there's a lot of pressure that goes along with that. And I think he's the type of kid who's up to that challenge, yet not lose any part of what makes him such a special player. So I'm really looking forward to watching him progress this year.
The tank for Bedard stock even higher after this tournament. Sam, quick one before we let you go. You a fan of 3-on-3 overtime to decide a gold medal?
Not for me. It was unbelievable
man,
to watch.
Yeah.
It sure was.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, if you're going to, you know, typically it's played on an Olympic ice surface. Mm-hmm. How you play 3-on-3 on Olympic ice, it doesn't make the cut for me. 5-on-5, the way the game is played, what got you there was 5-on-5 hockey, of course, a few power plays. But, mm-hmm. you know, 60 minutes of that, and then you take your three best players and say, go get them. Not for me, but fun to watch.
All right, Brent's cheering because you guys are on the same team. But well, agree.
Literally the exact answer I gave. Is it fun? Yes. Should we do it? No.
Agree to disagree.
Smart man, Sammy.
Embrace debate. We will hopefully see that 3-on-3 a little bit more in a month or 2 months or 3 months whenever the World Juniors are back. Appreciate you joining us this morning, Sam, and enjoy a little bit of downtime, hopefully, before the next one.
All right. Thanks a lot. But you know what? Extended by 5 minutes in the NHL. How's that?
Okay. That's a happy medium. I like it. Thanks, Sammy.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Sam Cosentino, our Sportsnet junior hockey and NHL draft analyst. Okay. I like what he proposed. You know, meet in the middle. He's like the guy I want to please both sides. I'm on the fence.
Here's the thing. Regular season NHL, yes, there is. We don't need shootouts. Just go. You give these guys 10 minutes. Somebody's scoring, okay? There's no way you can play perfect defense for that amount of time, 3-on-3. And also, I do like the point he said about Olympic ice. I feel like you need, like, a headset to talk to each other out there, 3-on-3 at Olympic ice. You're basically playing soccer at that point in time. So, look, I understand it. I do. I get it. But, come on, what are we doing
here? Cole from Stainer, Ontario. Says better than a shootout, but still whack.
Yeah. Again, like when you're right, you're right. And here's the thing: when you agree with me, you're right.
Right. Yeah. Somebody texted in, no name. 3-on-3 is unwatchable. I don't think it's unwatchable. It's more enjoying. I enjoy it more. It's more enjoyable. But Jeff from Kitchener, never watched 1 second of the World Juniors. Never watched one highlight. Don't care.
Sick. Thank you for the text, Jeff. What did I assume you watched some Blue Jays this weekend? Yeah. Then you're probably pretty happy. So there you go. And guess what? We talked a ton of Blue Jays. So you got fed, Jeff, from Kitchener.
Do you think the tournament was a success?
I think I really do understand. And let me be clear. Let me park the Hockey Canada of all this, because I think that obviously gums it up to super dumb it down here. But I do understand the idea of all of these players from all across the world. There are tons of guys who that was going to be their last chance to play. For many players, this is the last chance they will get to represent their country at a national an international level. Maybe they get a world champion chance. Maybe if you're Canadian, you get to play in the Spengler Cup one day. But for so many of these guys, this is their kind of last chance at glory. It's the same way I feel about, was there a point to having these senior seasons of college or letting a player have a fifth year? Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, in the overall history of sport, does it matter? No. But to Bill, who this is his last chance ever, it really does. So it was not some overwhelming success that we'll all talk about forever, but I think you had to give these players a chance to have it. So, yeah, I do think it was a success in that regard, but will we forget about it? You know what it'll be like? It'll be like the bubbles for the NBA and NHL. You had to do it. It happened. We're not going to be sitting here telling our grandkids about how great it was, but it got done, and Canada won gold, and the Lightning are champs, and the Lakers won their title. It all happened. You could decide how much it counts or all that, but I think you had to do it. So from that perspective, a success. What about you?
Yeah, player perspective, I really feel for the players that had to wait basically a year and a half from the first training camp, had to go through the delays. They had to continue to train. I think that most of the post-game stories from either team was that they were really proud of their team for sticking it out, making sure that they could represent their country. And you're right, like, I've had that opportunity to represent my country. It's so hard to put a value on that. It's a memory regardless of what else you go on to do in your career that resonates forever. It's like, you know, you put that crest on. A lot of players, we always have this debate, would you rather win an Olympic gold or a Stanley Cup? And I think that that's a really tough question, because there's something so special about representing your country and the pride that that brings. So a success in that sense, that they got an opportunity to do that, that the players that might not never get a chance to do that again will have this memory. Obviously, the Canadians get that amazing win, the one that'll go down infamously with Mason McTavish's save. Sweden getting their opportunity, USA blowing it, but the Czechs having a pretty good showing. I think there's a lot of positives to draw from it. I do believe that if you're Hockey Canada, you're not thinking it's a success because it was underappreciated in a sense because of everything that went around regarding, everything with Hockey Canada. I'm sure that they lost a lot of money. They lost a lot of sponsors, but that's deservedly so for what they're doing right now. Success for the players. We also had a quick text in because we talked about the ticket prices. And we had Matt who attended. Hey, let's just a quick comment on World Juniors ticket prices. I'm a season ticket Halifax Moosehead holder. $1,200 for the World Juniors package. $2,400 for my wife and I. And I wonder why they have such low attendance.
So that'd be for the one coming up, I would imagine, because that's where it'll be this year. Yeah, that's interesting. Look, here's the thing. It is a premium product, but it is a really weird happenstance where you have it where often now Edmonton, Halifax, far from small towns, but when you have a package where everybody wants to go to the Canada Games, maybe you have some interest in the States or somebody like that, but I talked to you about this in one of the breaks, World Cup of Hockey. It was awesome. Any game that wasn't Canada, I could walk in. I watched Sweden and Team North America for $25, and I sat a row behind John Gibson's dad in the lower bowl.
That's cool.
It was awesome. It was the best game I've ever attended. But guess what? Nobody cared because Canada wasn't playing. So it's always going to be a quick bugaboo problem for these tournaments. And quickly, last thing you said about, would you rather win a cup or an Olympic gold medal? I'm neither of these things, so it doesn't matter. If I am an all-star type player, I need to win the cup to check that on my resume. But I think if I'm just about anyone else and you tell me I get it in a true, like, best on best, then I think the Olympic gold does hold a little more value.
I like that debate.
You didn't ask, but there's my answer.
I like it. I think I agree. Look at us go. We can meet in the middle. Something that you did watch a lot of this weekend. Pretty much everybody listening was tuned in. Jeff will love this. We got another Blue Jays guest on, June Lee, who's actually MLB writer covering all over the league, who had a lot of Yankees covered before this. See where he sits after a weekend of Blue Jays dominance, we'll say. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.